Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? How do you like to hit the reset button to get ready for what's next? These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nothing but nonstop hustle all the time. With working from home and trying to stay in touch with friends and family, a million pressing social issues, and an expectation to always be on 24/7. Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. My moment to chill is watching baseball, especially when the White Sox are on. I like to have a Coors Light beside me. It's a great beer to have watching the games, as it's cool and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. And even the mountains on my cans turn blue, telling me that it's time to hit reset. Sit back, relax, and hunker down for an evening of White Sox baseball. So when it's time for you to unwind, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Must be 21 years or older to enjoy. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate responsibly.
From your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis and Josh Nelson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sox Machine Live. I am Josh Nelson alongside Jim Margulis. It is a very late April 29th night as the Chicago White Sox just completed their doubleheader sweep over the Detroit Tigers. And in game one, they won 3-1. They had a comeback late. It was a very tight game until late when the White Sox had a let's call it a biggish offensive output late in the game to help out Carlos Rodon. And in game two, an absolute rout as the Chicago White Sox won 11-0. They are now 14-10 in the regular season, still in second place, but now just a game and a half back of the Kansas City Royals. And they are now heading into the weekend with the Cleveland Indians coming into town for three more games. We'll preview that series, but a lot of this episode of Sox Machine Live will be focused on this doubleheader sweep for the Chicago White Sox as they wrap up their series against the Detroit Tigers. And joining me as the managing editor of SoxMachine.com and the co-host of the podcast, it's Jim Margulis. And Jim, I know that a lot of White Sox fans are going to look at this doubleheader sweep and they're going to look at game two and say, wow, 11-0, the offense, the bats, that's the big story. But I think for tonight, the big story is the outstanding starting pitching the Chicago White Sox got from both Carlos Rodon and Dylan Cease.
Well, it could be both, I think. I think Cease, just the curveball. I think there are ways that maybe Dylan Cease could have had a start like this, or have a line like this, seven innings, no runs, nine strikeouts against a bad Detroit offense and look a little bit underwhelming, or maybe just have a really good slider, or just maybe bully him around with the fastball a little bit and get just a bad lineup chasing. But he had three pitches working, and he had like the curveball that we heard about, like in coming at the minor leagues when they got him from the Cubs and down like Winston-Salem and such, just the hammer that locked people up. Like, he could not throw that in the major leagues with any kind of regularity. He was always bouncing it or rolling it or, basically letting it slip and having it go way above the zone. He didn't have this kind of command where he could drop it in for knee buckling strikes and like knee buckling check swings. So that was really exciting. And, he said after the game that he seemed to have solved like he seemed to unlock something just in terms of like where he was looking, where he was releasing it to. And, we've heard Cease a few times in spring training have very simple explanations for what seem like revelatory starts that don't quite pan out. So, I mean, I guess I'm holding my breath, or maybe I'm not holding my breath and just saying like, well, getting it two starts in a row, I'm expecting a little bit of a letdown next time as he tries to work through it. But at least we now know he can do it in a regulation game against a real lineup when he is going deep into games, not just like an inning or two at a time in Camelback Ranch.
Yeah, Dylan Cease tonight, 7 innings pitched. It is a complete game shutout for Dylan Cease. He only allowed 3 hits, striking out, I believe it was 8, unless I miss a strikeout at the end. Was it 8 strikeouts? It was 9 strikeouts. Mm-hmm. So good thing I double-checked. His season ERA now is below 3, thanks to this outstanding start. Now it's down to 2.96, and this stems from the conversation you and I had on Monday when we talked about Michael Kopech and the future of the White Sox starting rotation, that I had doubts. If Dylan Cease was going to be the starting pitcher that continues to struggle to get through the fifth inning, then I still believe this, that Michael Kopech's probably your better bet to get you consistently to the fifth or at least through the first 5 innings on 80 pitches. Tonight was a great night for Dylan Cease. And I do hope, Jim, that the adjustments that he talked about, he's able to bottle those up. And he can use them in future starts. That curveball that you mentioned really reminds me, if you remember watching Ben Sheets of the Milwaukee Brewers, Ben Sheets would have this incredible 12-6 curve. And during that post-game interview, something that I caught that C said was that he was trying to throw his curve higher. And I think that makes a lot of sense because he has been throwing his fastball up in the zone ever since he's been pitching the major leagues, it seems. So why not throw that curve higher? It may have a better opportunity to tunnel. And the way that that curve is coming out of his hand, that 12-6 curve, I mean, it does look like it's going to the top of the zone, and it is dropping. I mean, it's got a drastic drop to the bottom part of the strike zone, and he can throw it for strikes. And it makes me wonder that should be Cease's primary breaking pitch moving forward. And maybe that's the adjustment we'll see.
Well, I think if he's got both of them working like he had tonight, it doesn't really matter which one is which. Because, I mean, he was throwing that slider aggressively to left-handed hitters in a way that was just really refreshing. Just how aggressive he was, how confident he was that he could place it in that position, the inside corner or just off the inside corner, and not worrying about plunking a guy, or maybe not worrying about just plunking guys, because he tends to miss in that direction and sometimes well off. But now we can, now that he's shown it, it does open the possibility that, it could be a secondary breaking pitch. And I think that showing the curveball high at the batter's eyes and having it drop down for strikes, that helped his fastball out. And, this is a Detroit lineup too, that, maybe he looks a little bit better. And he got away with a couple of mistakes that were hit well, but didn't quite make the warning track, or Luis Robert caught one like right before the wall. And maybe that leaves the yard against a better team and a deeper offense. But, you can only pitch against who you're playing. And he struggled against lesser offenses, too. So I don't want to take that away from him. But I'm hoping that just the curveball command he showed and the threat of being able to drop it in for strikes just makes hitters think a little bit more about the high fastball that he hasn't been able to quite get because of that cut. The way it doesn't have the kind of vertical carry the way that Kopech does, and how Cease can even get burned on decent fastballs that are at the top of the zone or above it. Just having that something else to think about at the top of the zone might allow him to buy that extra millisecond or whatever he needs for that fastball to really play up, whether it's getting swings and misses or just useless foul balls that open up other pitches one pitch later.
Cease's next projected start looks like it's going to be at Cincinnati next week. And if it's not in Cincinnati, then it could be at Kansas City, which the first series between the White Sox and the Royals in in the early part of May is growing as far as importance, it seems like, by the passing day, especially with the way that the Kansas City Royals have started the season. So next start for Dylan Cease will be a stronger test because the Cincinnati Reds have been playing good baseball to start the 2021 season. And if it's not the Reds, then it'll be kind of an important game for Dylan Cease and the Chicago White Sox early in 2021 at Kansas City. Again, hopefully something did truly unlock for Dylan Cease. He can bottle it up because, again, with Michael Kopech, there is an innings limit or a number of pitches limit for him in this season. It would just be nice that if Dylan Cease can untap some of that potential that we've seen from him, because it was a struggle watching him to start this season. The fact that he couldn't get through the fifth inning doesn't really give anyone a lot of confidence in his ability to stick as a starting pitcher. But hopefully, again, tonight, that this is the night that really launches him over the next couple of weeks. And he's someone that can consistently for the White Sox get through the fifth and sixth inning, because I don't want to hear about bullpen usage. They have had the day off pretty much today because Carlos Rodon was also outstanding, Jim, in the first game. And I'm going to bring up this banner, Cy Rodon. Do we need to start the Carlos Rodon Cy Young campaign? Maybe others have done it already on Twitter.
That feels like you're tempting Kenny Williams to say, basically, stay healthy.
Today, Carlos Rodon went six innings. He only allowed two hits, one earned run. He walked one. He struck out 12, a career high. I don't recognize this Carlos Rodon compared to the Rodon.
Yeah.
The Rodon we've seen the last three years. Yeah. And, you know, in April, Jim, he ends April, you know, for win-loss record 4-0 with a 0.72 ERA. And again, back to, you know, hopefully Dylan Cease has found something that he could bottle up and use for future starts. Ever since the first start of the season, it appears that Carlos Rodon has found something. Everything is clicking for him and he has bottled it up. And now he might win American League Pitcher of the Month.
I'm trying to think who else is better when it comes to pitcher of the month, when it just comes to, you know, maybe you have guys who have racked up more innings because Rodon's had a couple of shorter starts, but just the dominance and the, you know, the clean record, these ERA that starts with the zero, the no hitter. It's hard to think of a better package, both in terms of performance and narrative, but yeah, I mean, like I didn't foresee him having the best month of his career in his very first month back. Like, you know, given, you know, we talked about it, you know, over the winter and then in spring training, like the to-do list that Ethan Katz gave him, that sounded like a lot for a pitcher mid-career after some success and more failures and injuries, and just thinking like, well, you know, if he had that much to do, you would think that it would either be just, you know, like impossible for him to do it, or if it'd just be, you know, he didn't feel comfortable making mechanical changes, or just pure stubbornness that he didn't do it. And the fact that it all clicked so easily is, I think, what's surprising. And maybe, you know, just him being healthy, and this happened to be the month that he's healthy, was able to do it. But yeah, just the fastball, you know, the command early and then the power late, I think, is something I like seeing. You know, when the command, you know, with the fatigue, sometimes that will take some command away, like we saw Giolito in the first game, where the command starts flagging. And it seems like Rodon's able to make up for that just by finding more. And, you know, 91 in the first inning is occasionally able to hit 96 or 97 later. And I think that helps mask some of those issues he might have locating just as fatigue sets in.
Yeah, in the first inning, he was having trouble arm side. But as you mentioned, as the game continued, he was able to find that command. And when the hitters, for most of the night for Detroit, were seeing 92, 93 from his four-seamer, and then all of a sudden he's throwing this 97 mile-per-hour pitch up in the zone, then that really throws him off. And even in his post-game interview, Steve Stone was asking him, were we watching two different sliders? And Rodon did admit, yes, that he was throwing two different versions of his slider. One that he can consistently throw as far as a strike, but it's a bit flatter And then, of course, he still has that wipeout slider that he's always had when the White Sox drafted him back in 2014 that he was famous for coming out of NC State. But you mentioned as far as the changeup, comparing these three pitches, the fastball, changeup, and slider, how close do you think the changeup is as far as quality to Rodon's fastball and slider?
It still seems like a distant third, at least when Rodon's slider he's locating it the way he wants to. I think it might be more of a pitch that helps him get strikes with something that isn't a fastball when that slider just isn't there. I think that's maybe the key for him right now, is just that the changeup might not factor so much on his scouting report to where hitters just aren't looking for it. They're aware of, okay, I don't want to hit something. I don't want to swing at something that's going to hit my back foot or my knee. And so maybe they're just, they're looking fastball and then like laying off the pitch that probably isn't a strike. And so having a second pitch that comes out slower, that doesn't come out with the heat of his fastball, maybe is, kind of share some, characteristics in terms of where it's located coming out of his hand, that maybe makes hitters jumping off balanced, and then the fastball plays up because of that. And that's something to watch as we go forward. Either, if Rodon's slider command isn't the way it normally is, for the rest of the season, or at least in this new form, to where the changeup is more important. Mm-hmm. Do hitters key on that changeup more and make him throw the slider, make him prove that that's still a weapon? That's something I'm curious to see if it'll happen. But I'm hoping like he does, maybe that slider is just something that takes him a couple of innings to lock into. Because the no hitter is the same way. That wasn't there early, but it showed up later. Maybe it's just something where it's more of a feel thing that comes over the course of a couple of innings. But it's nice that he has multiple ways to succeed, because I thought, once the fastball velocity dipped last year, that basically the slider was, he's got the slider his way out of everything. And I didn't think that was sustainable for more than like 3 or 4 innings.
Yeah. And again, this is an incredible start for Carlos Rodon. And hopefully this continues, because this is by far and away the best he's ever looked in a White Sox uniform. On Twitter, you're already getting some White Sox fans asking about a contract extension. I have been down that path before. I got subtweeted to hell by relatives of Carlos Rodon that didn't think he needed to sign an extension. I don't think we're a long ways away from that conversation. But after the first month of this resurrection of Carlos Rodon's career, a fantastic month. And hopefully it continues into the month of May, because with the White Sox being 14-10, the offense, there are some surprises. We'll talk about Yermer Mercedes in a moment. But Jose Abreu's not having the greatest month. Yoan Moncada starting to pick up as far as his average, and he hit a home run tonight, which is great to see. But his slugging numbers aren't where you would like them to be. Yasmani Grandal struggled from the left side of the plate. Those three guys, I think we were expecting better starts. But other offensive players have stepped up. But I think in the first month of April, where the White Sox are today, it's a big part of it is the starting rotation. Mm-hmm. And the big part of the starting rotation right now is Carlos Rodon. He's throwing the ball the best out of the five, or even if you want to count Michael Kopech, 6 starting pitchers that we've seen so far in the month of April. And hopefully that continues. And I'm starting to build up some confidence in Rodon, Jim, that, in these coming games against the Royals and the Minnesota Twins, that, at the beginning of the season, I would be scared to be like, I hope that Carlos Rodon doesn't face these teams. And now after the month of April, it's like, bring it on. Yeah, mm-hmm. Go Carlos Rodon. Face Jose Barrios. Let's steal this game against the Twins ace.
Yeah, that's depth. It's weird. And that's depth I didn't think Rodon was going to be able to provide, whether it's because he just wasn't efficient enough to pitch past 5 innings regularly, or just wasn't healthy enough to pitch at all. That's when they signed him as a depth starter, I was really concerned. And, that Jose Quintana, like I wasn't hugely for Quintana, but he seemed like the combination of fit on paper and familiarity that, ended up being why Rodon came back in large part. I thought he was going to be the guy who could step up for a few starts when a couple of the starters above him just failed to deliver. And he could stop a losing streak by himself and not wait for the rotation to turn around and have Giolito come back. But having Rodon show up and being the you know, maybe he's not a stopper yet, but he can do it. Like he can stop a losing streak. You can see these. And I think that helps in a winning start in April when you have like an offense that's characteristically April right now, uneven, you know, kind of too aggressive, fly balls aren't carrying, too many ground balls. Just we've seen this April offense before, and you having the pitching staff show up and stop losing streaks from getting out of control, just with the strength of, good first six innings. And even, you know, a starting pitching that's able to mask a bullpen that is struggling way more than anybody thought, I think is really refreshing. And yeah, having Carlos Rodon, a fifth starter on paper, pitching like a first starter, that's something that really helps a lot in that regard, just hiding deficiencies elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, the bullpen, only Liam Hendricks appeared for the White Sox bullpen in this doubleheader, picking up his fifth save, closing out game one. And today rinses out the bad taste of Tuesday night, which was not a fun game for the White Sox. But hey, today was a very good day for the White Sox, and they are 14-10. And somebody that had a very good day was Lurie Garcia. I don't know why Lurie Garcia is playing as much as he has been, Jim, but today he had a good day. Let's give him credit. He had the game-winning hit in game one with a game tied 1-1. I don't know why Billy Hamilton batted with the bases loaded, but thank you, Miguel Cabrera, for making another defensive mistake for Detroit that allowed the game tying run to score. And then Garcia came next and had the two-run single, and that's what the White Sox needed to win 3-1. And then he picked up even more RBIs in game two. He had five RBIs in the day, Jim. Lurie Garcia in both games, starting both games, went 3-for-6 with five RBIs, and he made a nice catch in right field in game two. And I feel it in my bones. I'm expecting now Lurie Garcia to start the opening game of the series against Shane Bieber Friday night when Cleveland comes into town, Jim. And it does make me wonder because, you know, La Russa has been, you know, hinting at the fact that Lurie Garcia is going to get more playing time because he thinks he's in a rut. And the only way to get out of a rut is to play more. Is it important to make sure that Lurie Garcia gets into a rhythm for this White Sox squad that we're seeing him so often?
Kind of. I mean, it's tough because you don't want to be in position of like rooting against somebody, which, you know, in a case like this, it gets the part where you just don't know what's more beneficial for the White Sox in the long run. Like having Garcia just have a terrible 2 weeks where he's either just hitting everything like straight in the ground or striking out, or do you want him to have like a sign of life like this where, you know, he delivers some big hits and, you know, the hit that he had in the for the first run of game two, where it was a flare over the infield. I'm not sure if it even touched the outfield grass. The infield was drawn in. And you know, that's a hit where it's just like, that's not a hit most of the time. That's not, you know, useful contact if the infield isn't aggressively positioned to cut down a run. And you know, that even might be an infield fly rule given just how where it landed. Like, is that a hit that you feel is replicable and useful, the kind of contact, you know, that you want to see from him? On the other hand, it's in the air, you know, like the line drive single that he had was in the air. You know, it wasn't just the grounders just hit right where they're positioned them, either to the right side or just left of second. Like, it's useful. He's not bunting, like he's swinging away. He's at least getting some feel back. So just, you know, I think he's probably enough of the White Sox plans right now, especially like, say, you know, if Adam Engels had a setback in his recovery, if Adam Eaton's knee is something to worry about, you're going to have Garcia still there, still prevalent. And so you're probably going to want him to have starts like this. I think we talked about it before in the, I'm blanking on Twitter's, Spaces? Is that the Twitter?
Yeah, Twitter Spaces.
Yeah. Twitter Spaces, yeah. I'm trying to keep all these live audio apps correct. But yes, we talked about that, just saying that you know, it seems like Tony La Russa, a penchant of his, is to just fall in love with the utility player. And if he's going to fall in love with Garcia, then he better hit, you know, just for everybody's sake. You know, maybe not for Garcia's sake, because he's going to play regardless. But just for everybody watching, I mean, you might like grit your teeth and just say like, no, that's another five at bats. You know, when he has like a lucky single that probably wouldn't land based on positioning or what have you. But if he's going to play and he's not going to be a bet to put the ball over the fence, you know, those lucky singles and those infield singles and reaching on errors, that is part of his game, even when he's going right. So you may as well just hope that there's more where it came from.
And let's talk about Andrew Vaughn. And AJ posted this as far as in our comments on our YouTube page. Is Andrew Vaughn getting it together? Is it worth keeping him up? I get the feeling Tony La Russa wants to keep him up. And this is a conversation that we've had for a little bit, Jim, in the last couple of weeks. And I would say last week I was pretty confident that he was going to go to Charlotte on May 4th, just the way that he wasn't being used and just the lack of playing time and maybe not getting the best results, that perhaps he just needed some time in AAA. But in game two tonight of this doubleheader, he goes 3 for 4. He gets two more doubles. He's hitting the ball with authority. And after watching him tonight, it's like, man, the White Sox should play this guy more often.
Yeah, well, I think that's part by design. Like, you know, I think with the position that Vaughn's in, being dropped into the majors while never playing a competitive game, standard game above A ball, just I think, you know, it's partially designed that La Russa wants to put him in positions to succeed against lefties and righties he might have a better chance against, to where, you know, I think the best case scenario is that people are angry that he's not playing more. That means that he's playing well and left, to where you don't have to worry about your mean Mercedes stealing at bats from him at DH. And then, you know, he's hitting well enough that you feel like he's worthy of more challenges, even facing a Bieber type. And, you know, we saw, you know, in game two, to where, like, you know, with swinging through some high fastballs from righties, you know, that just might feel like, you know, against a good righty, he's still going to have some bad games. And then, you know, he's facing Derek Holland from the left side, and Derek Holland might be done. Like, that's one of the case, you know, watching his outing and seeing, you know, like, I looked at his numbers after that outing, because I missed them when they were flashing on the screen, and just thinking, like, this is a guy who might be reaching the end of the line. and you know, if he ropes a double against him, is like, what does that teach you? A little bit, but not much, you know, in terms of playing him against better pitchers against, like, in key divisional games. But I think he's at least earned the playing time to have a bad game, have two bad games, and then adjust accordingly, and not have two bad games be the reason why he sent down to Charlotte. I think right now, if he goes, like, say if he starts against Bieber and has a silver sombrero and then comes back the next day, goes 0-for-5, maybe you bench him, or, you know, maybe have him sit a little bit to clear his head, because, you know, I think the key right now still is not embarrassing the guy, because as the league gets adjusted to him, different ways to attack him, like, he's not out of the woods just yet, but he's earned the playing time. And, you know, Garcia, I think that's the reason why fans who want to see Leury be productive, like, that's one reason why fans might not want to see Garcia deliver some big hits, is because they don't want to see him steal Vaughn's playing time. But hopefully there's more of a balance there, just because, you know, Vaughn, he's doing everything asked of him. And now I think it's a little bit fair to ask more of him. Even if it's, you know, maybe just not going to turn out well. It's a long season. You can, you know, have a game not turn out well, and he can bounce back.
You mentioned Derek Holland being toast. I enjoy the toast scale. I'm not sure if you are familiar with the scale of toast. That's just what I thought of. And I'm like, oh, where would Derek Holland be? Like, black, like, charred bread is where Derek Holland would be. Bless him, he's chasing the dream, you know. Old friend alert, Derek Holland.
Yeah, it's one of those cases where I look to see, like, how close is he to his pension fully vesting?
Is he close?
He's fully vested. He's fully vested. He's got 11.
Oh, what's he doing around? You got 10 years.
No, I mean, I don't blame him for trying, but just in terms of, like, how, you know, if it comes down to, like, not getting a major league contract anymore, I think that's where the difference is. Keep getting major league chances. Got cool. You may as well, but.
Yeah, might as well. In game two, so Leury Garcia had a big night. Andrew Vaughn had a big night. Big home runs for the Chicago White Sox as well. Yoan Moncada. Hey, Yoan Moncada has a base hit against a changeup, Jim. If I had the air horn, I'd be blowing it right now. He's 1-for-17 against changeups in 2021. So hopefully that continues. The reverse jinx worked. But Yoan Moncada hit another home run off a slider in game two. And Yoan Mercedes went to the shrubbery in center field, as Jason Benetti called it, from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, as far as the Knights Who Say Knee. If you don't know that reference, you can check it out. It's a goofy movie, but I enjoy it still. But just an absolute blast from Yoan Mercedes, 449 feet to dead center field. Again, this was a good night offensively for the White Sox. Jose Abreu picked up a couple more RBIs and a more balanced swing. That was nice to see on a slider. He's got 19 RBIs in the month of April so far. He's got a chance to have a 20 RBI month, depending on what he does against Shane Bieber on Friday in the final day of April. But, you know, back to Yoan Mercedes, Jim, and, you know, we're going to be wrapping up the very first month of his professional career, and what a month it has been. He is now hitting .423. I'm not sure if he's going to win player of the month. Byron Buxton has had a huge month for the Minnesota Twins.
That's what came to mind for me.
Yeah, Mike Trout is putting up absurd numbers as well. You know, it's funny. Byron Buxton, Mike Trout, and Yoan Mercedes are battling right now for the lead in the American League for batting title after 1 month of the season. And hopefully that continues. But I don't know what else more to say about Yoan Mercedes other than the fact that this guy really seems comfortable in the role that he's with the Chicago White Sox now as being the primary DH. Mm-hmm. And I'm expecting this slump to come, but I don't know when it's coming. And he seems to be really comfortable in the batter's box, Jim.
Yeah, I don't think that if he's going to regress, and I imagine he will, it's going to be a gentle one. Like, he's not going to have awful games. Like, he just might have like a string of weaker contact, two strike counts where he shortens up and just tries punching the ball, and the punching the ball doesn't work.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
In one case, like, he had that one where he punched the ball and ended up being like, I don't know, like 300-foot fly ball. Like, I thought, oh, that's like, you know, that's a Nick Madrigal blooper to the right center gap, and then like it's flagged down.
Yeah,
like,
just keeps,
you know,
going.
Yeah, it just keeps going. He's got that backspin on it that I think just maybe makes it hard for him to drop in some singles that others can't. Like, he's just too strong. But like today, you know, the game two is an example where I just thought, like, oh, this is a quiet game for him. Like, he missed out his chance to get a hit. He had one run, you know, flagged down the right center gap. This is the game for other people to take the lead. You know, Yoan Moncada having the laser homer and Vaughn with his hits and Leury breaking out. Then, you know, the 450-foot homer out of nowhere. Just like, oh, yeah, your means here. Like, he's, yeah. You know, just, I think he, you know, there's that quote, and I think the James Fegan story talking about, like, he likes when a team gets on his back. And I think he's somebody who, you know, even if somebody, you know, even if you think there's a pick to click and your pick to click came through, I think he just wants to put on a show and he wants to be the guy. And not in a selfish way, because I think if he were in a selfish way, he wouldn't have that two strike swing, but he just wants people to, he's a crowd pleaser. And I think a crowd pleaser that's also a teammate pleaser.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know, since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
And the White Sox so far are 5-1 on this homestand, this 9-game homestand, and they're in a great position to win at least 6 games, which we talked about at the beginning, and we even did a Twitter poll where it was overwhelming that White Sox fans would be only happy if they won 6-plus games on this homestand. facing inferior teams, and let's call them inferior, with the Texas Rangers and the Detroit Tigers. They're not going to be competing this year. The White Sox have won five of those six games. Sure, maybe they should have won all six against them, but they're in a great position here to have a six or even a seven-win homestand. And next on this Sox Machine Live episode, we're going to be previewing the episode. I'm sorry, not episode, the upcoming series against the Cleveland Indians as they come into town. And Friday is going to be a tough night for the Chicago White Sox. Shane Bieber again will be on the mound, and he was outstanding for Cleveland in his last start at Guaranteed Rate Field, throwing nine scoreless innings, racking up 13 strikeouts. Hopefully the second time around is a little bit more successful for the White Sox. But Bieber, you know, we talked about Carlos Rodon and his Cy Young campaign. The defending Cy Young for the American League has been pitching just as well to start 2021. Opposite of him is going to be Dallas Keuchel. So that's not going to be an easy day for Cleveland, especially if Keuchel continues his success that he had against the Texas Rangers. That could be a low-scoring affair for Friday. Saturday and Sunday, these are afternoon games. Saturday is a 3:05 p.m. Central Time start for that game. That's going to be to be announced for the Cleveland Indians, as they do not have their probable starters announced for both Saturday and Sunday. But for the White Sox, it's the return of Lance Lynn, and Lucas Giolito will make the start on Sunday. He pitched really well from the second through sixth inning against Detroit. And obviously he has that one bad inning in the seventh inning. And hopefully that Lucas Giolito can bounce back again. And, you know, that's another storyline we're talking about. Can Lucas Giolito bounce back from a bad start? That wasn't a bad start, Jim, that Lucas Giolito had. It was just unfortunate that he was in that position to pitch in the seventh inning. So I'm not too concerned about the Sunday start. But for Cleveland, this is a team that's one game below 500. They recently just won their series against the Minnesota Twins at home, winning 2 out of 3. This is an offense that continues to struggle for Cleveland, but pitching-wise, they've been doing very well. They only have a -3 run differential to start the season. They're playing like a 500 team. I am most interested to see in this series on how Lance Lynn comes back. Because we talked about Dylan Cease, and we've talked about Michael Kopech, and Lucas Giolito was better in his last start against Detroit, and Dallas Keuchel was very good against Texas. To keep this momentum going on the starting pitching front, it'd be nice to see that Lance Lynn is back to his full strength, and that back strain is not a lingering effect for him, because Lance Lynn's been a workhorse the last few years, and that's the reason why the White Sox traded for him. So that's what I'm going to be focusing on, is that Saturday game with Lance Lynn's return, on just how healthy he is and how strong he is and how deep he can go into that game. What are you going to be focusing on in this series against Cleveland?
Yeah, Lance Lynn, you know, like I would say, you know, with his injury, it was such that it came as a surprise. Like, you know, his last start was fine. Like, I don't, you know, if he made his next start on schedule, nobody would have been surprised. There's no real sign that was going to happen. So I'm hoping he'll come back and it'll just be like, you know, Garrett Crochet also went on the injured list with a similar back, you know, upper back issue. And, you know, maybe it's a case where they just look at the schedule, they see all the off days and see, like, well, you know, may as well not make it worse. And we may as well, if we can get by with Lynn missing one start, he ended up missing no starts effectively. Like, nobody, they didn't need a bullpen day to take his place. Like, you know, may as well, you know, it's April, long season, division isn't looking like it doesn't look like a 4-team division right now. And the three teams you might have, like, it's one of the three teams is not one you expected. So it's, you know, there's an opportunity to take a rest early and may as well. So I'm hoping that Lance Lynn, like, looks fine and looks like he did the last time out. And that would maybe just indicate that it really was nothing. I'm curious too about Adam Eaton, just having the knee issue that he had. And then he, struck out a couple of times, didn't look great at the plate in game one. And then he took a suspension in game two, well-timed. That was, fortuitous the way that worked out. He takes a suspension in a game he wouldn't have started anyway. They score 11 runs. Perfect. I'm hoping that, he's falling down three times randomly is, like, that's odd. And he's had knee problems before. And, you know, he's you know, that's the reason why, you know, two reasons I didn't, you know, I wasn't a big fan of signing was one, that he had performance issues. Then he also had just, you know, even if he performs, he might not stay healthy. And seeing those three falls and not having a great explanation for him, and then, you know, not seeing a palate cleanser of performance yet, I'm hoping that shows up, because, you know, if he's not around, then, you know, I guess that's one way for Vaughn to play every day, but that means Garcia's playing every day as well, and Engel's not back yet, so that looks pretty rough.
The White Sox lead the season series so far, 3-2. That second game in Cleveland got rained out. Again, that'll be made up later in the month of May. If the White Sox win this series, then in the first 7 games against Cleveland in 2021, Jim, the White Sox would have a winning record. They'd be 4-3 or 5-2, even if they only win one game this weekend against Cleveland, which, you know, it kind of leave a little bitter taste in the mouth of White Sox fans through this 9-game homestand. If they win at least one game, they're at least .500 against Cleveland in 2021. And I find this to be great progress for the White Sox and a good sign that they could win this American League Central, because we've talked about this often. The way that Cleveland likes to play baseball doesn't play to the White Sox strength.
Strong right-handed pitching.
Yeah, strong right-handed pitching, a team that feels comfortable playing 3-2 games, because if they're down 2-1, they got Jose Ramirez. And say what you want about being clutch, Jose Ramirez is clutch. He comes up in big time moments, in high leverage situations, late in games.
Jordan Luplow for some reason.
Yeah, Jordan Luplow too. They are annoying, the Cleveland Indians to play against, as far as watching as a fan, because you feel like, well, this team's really not that good, but you're in the 7th inning and it's like 2-1 and you're tense. It's just it's a very tense contest between White Sox and Cleveland. So hopefully we don't get too many tense games this upcoming weekend. But I do like the way that the White Sox have started this season against Cleveland, because I thought this was going to be a trouble team for them. And for the first 8 games of the season, I think the White Sox are playing well against them.
Yeah, I think when it comes to I think you could probably lump the Royals in too, because they need to be suppressed. Like, they're played well enough to where they need to be dealt with. So I think when you look at those 4 teams, it's just basically holding your own's fine. Like, you know, hovering, you know, .500, ideally better. But even like a game worse, you can probably absorb, you know, as long as you take care of business against weaker teams. And there are weaker teams in the American League. And we've seen the Indians just, and Twins too, just beat up on the White Sox for 19 games at a time, basically determine AL Central standings or American League standings or wild card finishes based on just how they thump the White Sox. So putting an end to that bleeding, especially like the way Cleveland swept them last year, avoiding that kind of losing streak, poorly timed. And you know, you hope that, you know, I would say the one point of, you know, maybe these games are more important now is like, if you can put some distance in between Cleveland and Minnesota now before the deadline, like make them make difficult decisions at the deadline, maybe take a step back at the deadline, sell players off, not add, you know, not push prospects, just what have you. Like, if you can try to demoralize them early, you know, that's the value in these wins being more than just a win in April. But at the same time, like, they're a good team. So if you drop 2 out of 3 in one random series, you know, with especially the Bieber on the mound for one of them, you know, it's just, that's how it goes.
Yeah. And if they could find a way to muster some runs against Shane Bieber, I think that'd be a good step forward, because again, he was just lights out the last time the White Sox faced Shane Bieber. They did not score at all. They ended up losing that game in extra innings 2-0. But hopefully the White Sox find a way to get some runs against Shane Bieber. If they're able to steal that game, that would be huge for this weekend for the White Sox and a great way to end this homestand for them. And who knows, maybe what happens over the weekend for the Kansas City Royals, the White Sox could be tied with them or maybe even in the lead in the American League Central before they start that road trip where they go to Cincinnati and Kansas City next week, which we'll talk more about those series on Monday Sox Machine podcast.
Oh, but that will do it for this. Oh, one note about veteran lefties here is that the Cleveland DFA'd Oliver Perez. You're talking about like lefties who are just kind of hanging on and doing what they can. 16 years of service time.
Damn.
And who knows? He might get another chance, because, I mean, he wasn't – like, I'm looking at his line with Cleveland. Like, he hadn't allowed a run yet. They just – Francona said that he couldn't find situations for somebody with that unique a skill set, but probably haven't seen the last of him, but for the time being, the White Sox won't face him.
Chirizzi's doppelganger.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, bud. Who ate? The White Sox need a lefty.
Why doesn't he go the mustache route?
Chirizzi?
Like, especially with Cleveland visiting, just like shave off his beard into a mustache, jump into the bullpen, see if anybody notices.
Hey, Oliver, where did you come from?
Sorry, I forgot some things.
That'd be great. That would be great. But yes, our good friend Chirizzi from the 108 does look like Oliver Perez. And Oliver Perez is a free agent. So wherever he goes, hopefully Chirizzi continues his rooting interest along with wherever Oliver Perez ends up. What a career, though.
If White Sox could use a lefty.
White Sox could use a lefty. That's all I'm saying. And if that does happen, Chirizzi, if you're listening to this or watching this, you got to buy a jersey. Not a jersey. You got to buy a jersey. You got to make that commitment. But again, that good place to end as far as the Sox Machine Live. And thank you to everyone that watched as far as the live stream on our YouTube page at youtube.com/Sox Machine. And if you get a chance to watch us live, we'll always have the live streams for the 2021 season on our YouTube page, which you can subscribe to the YouTube page at youtube.com/Sox Machine. I would also highly recommend you guys follow us on Twitter at Sox Machine, and you can follow me on Twitter at @SoxMachine_Josh. We've been playing around with Twitter Spaces. It allows us to have a audio-only room that we can have conversations, and we've been playing out the last couple of days. We've gotten really good feedback. So that might be more impromptu as far as conversations that we have before a game or after a game, maybe even during a game. Who knows? We're still testing it out, but if you are
on Twitter, built for rain delays.
It is built for rain delays. That is true. But if you are on Twitter, follow us on Twitter. We're at Sox Machine, and you'll get notifications when we have launched a Twitter space, and you can join in as far as a conversation and listen to Jim chat. And we'll bring in other folks from White Sox Twitter as well to continue the conversation about the Chicago White Sox during the 2021 season. If you don't get a chance to watch the live stream of Sox Machine Live, no worries. The podcast is always uploaded into the podcast feed, which you can subscribe to the Sox Machine podcast wherever you listen to podcasts like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you do enjoy our work and you want more, you can get more by becoming a friend at patreon.com/Sox Machine, where we have several different tiers of support starting at $2 a month, $3 a month, $5 a month, and $10 a month, where you get an ad-free version of the podcast, also the website as well. You also get exclusive content. This past week, I posted the MLB draft database for our Patreon supporters, so they have a nice little database that they can go to see where all the draft rankings are for the upcoming draft prospects for Major League Baseball. I also posted my first mock draft as well. So if you are interested in getting more from us as far as exclusive content and you want first crack at any new Sox Machine swag items, go to patreon.com/Sox Machine to sign up today. And again, that will do it for this episode of Sox Machine Live. Thank you guys so much for listening and watching. Alongside Jim Margulis, I'm Josh Nelson. Have a good night.
At ADP, we understand the importance of building the right team and offer the data insights to help. Just as importantly, our AI technology helps you pay the team accurately. Grow stronger with ADP, HR, talent, time, and payroll.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.